Rewards programs are a lot like pop culture. They can be hard to keep up with. But with Venmo's new rewards program, Venmo Stash, rewards are so easy because the more you do, the more you get. And you choose the bundle of brands you get cash back at. It's giving fiscal queen. It's giving star. It's giving up to 5% cash back at your favorite brands. Just pick a bundle of your go-to spots to shop with your Venmo debit card and earn cash back at them. Do more, get more with Venmo Stash. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. Venmo Stash bundle terms and exclusions apply. Max $100 cash back per month. See terms at venmo.me/stash terms.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is a special Monday edition of Sunday's Beyond the Darkness. Yeah, I know we promised we'd be out yesterday with a brand new episode, but, you know, I could blame it on the alcohol. I could blame it on Michigan Paracon. I could blame it on the elements or gremlins or goblins, but that's not it. It just literally, there was so much going on and we were committed to do so much at the conference. And Tim and I are old men who are worn the hell out. So we are back today. We've got a great show, and I promise it's going to be well worth it. So this is, remember when they used to do that, the Wednesday night edition of Monday Night Football, Tim? I kind of felt like that's the vibe we're bringing today.
Absolutely. We're bringing 110% a couple of days late. No, I'm kidding.
That's right.
Right.
So we've got a good show lineup, and we're going to talk about a lot of different topics today. John Tenney is our guest. He's been on with us in the past, and I always love when he visits with us. We had a chance to hang out at the Michigan Paracon again, and we do our ritualistic hour of blathering about silly geek nonsense from Doctor Who to Godzilla to the state of the world. And I love having those times with you, John. Thanks a lot for coming back on.
Thanks for having me. You know, I'm here for you whenever you need.
Well, I appreciate that. And you've always got the coolest stuff going on. Just to give people a little bit of your background again, I know it's been a while since we've had you on the show. You've been really involved in the strange and unusual for quite a while. And you used to work behind the scenes of Unsolved Mysteries with Robert Stack.
Yeah, that was really my first kind of professional launch into the field. I gave my first weird lecture at and then when I was in college, somehow or another, I got asked by a person who worked at NBC if I wanted to, you know, work on this show called Unsolved Mysteries. And I said yes. And it's just been bonkers from there. You know, the 90s was weird. There were all these kind of one-off shows like Sightings and Very Scary Stories. But Unsolved was really the one that continues to stick with people.
Now, had you had any thoughts or beliefs in the paranormal and that type of content prior to getting this opportunity to work on the show?
Sure. I started off when I was I was a gopher, pretty much just running and getting coffee and doing paperwork for a professor in Detroit who specialized in political assassinations of the 1960s and 70s. So, you know, back then, conspiracy theorists are much different than the way it is now. It just seems very bonkers at this point, where before it was just more of a historical study of things that were somewhat fluid in the past. And when I was working with Craig, who was my mentor, there were all these names that would come up. I would see, looking through government documents, I would see J. Allen Hynek's name in relationship to, since he was in Chicago and so was the Black Panther Party, but then I would run into Hynek's name about UFOs. And so I started reading about UFOs and UFOs lead to ghosts and Bigfoot. And before I know it, you know, a few years later, like I said, I was giving lectures, which I still call weird lectures. They're not so much about ghosts or UFOs or Bigfoot or conspiracy theories. It's the whole ball of wax rolled up into one smelly sock.
You're so poetic. It's no wonder that you've been such a fascinating writer. I do love your website, by the way. People should check out your website, weirdlectures.com. We're going to have a link on it for today's show so you can find it. But you keep a fascinating blog and great bunch of information there. I know whenever we do these conferences, I hate when you're there because I always like being the one that gets the accolades for being really funny. And then they go see your talk and they're like, hey, remember when I told you you guys were our favorite talk? Well, Tenney was on and man, did he blow you guys out of the water. You son of a bitch. But it's great to.
I appreciate it. But it's one of those things, right? Like hearing your voice when it's recorded, like I have no idea that I am that people find me funny. Because, like, when I listen to my jokes, all I do is groan, but then I hear people laugh at them, and it's like your voice. When people say you have a good voice and you hear it on a tape recorder, you're like, oh, I have a terrible voice. It's the same thing with me and jokes.
Yeah, but the humor is a big aspect of this, and I think, you know, Jeff Belanger, Tim, myself, when we do these events, and I know kind of following the same vein you do, is when you can educate people and make them laugh through it, and especially with topics like this, understanding that, yeah, we take it seriously, but we're also very conscious of just how bizarre and weird and asinine some of these topics sound, and I think that's why people appreciate the talks that we all present, because we do give them that aspect with the knowing nod that, yes, this is weird. This is fascinating. But who the hell could believe this? And yet there's still that believability factor. And you've really mastered the ability of being able to make that happen. So I think we're all playing in your shadow right now, you jerk. Just retire from private talks so that the rest of us can shine more. No, you do great, man. And I love listening to your talks. I love even when you host other people's panels and discussions, you keep the flow moving and have that good meter down. Do you see that same aspect that you kind of have to have a little bit of a sense of humor about this topic when you're doing it? And it can't just be, you know, it can't just always be dark and tongue in cheek in your trench coat in the middle of the fog somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, we do all want, you know, serious research and to make breakthroughs, whatever that means. And we want people to, you know, kind of listen to our stories with a certain amount of restraint. And yet at the end of it all, right, like if you just pitch it down to its simplest form, like we are doing something that seems very goofy. You know, we talk to what are alleged to be invisible denizens of another world. We run through the forest looking for what we hope will be monsters. We search the sky for extraterrestrial presences. It's like, it is very goofy. And so you do have to step back every now and then say, like, have fun with what you're doing. You know, a lot of times in the paranormal community or the supernatural community, you have people who really rail against capital S skeptics and the cynics of the world. And one of the reasons I think it's easy to go after them is because there is no sense of humor in that community. They don't find it funny. They don't find it a way to interact and touch and be involved with a much larger community. It's just about being smart, and that gets boring very fast.
Yeah, it certainly does. If I could tell you how often I find myself boring, I couldn't even begin to count that much. You know, one thing that you and I have talked about over the last 2 years is intention and intention experiments. And you've done a couple of really fascinating intention experiments. And I wanted to kind of talk to you about that and have you share them, because I don't know, Tim, have you talked to John about what they've been doing and the really strange results they've been getting?
I have not. No.
Mm-mm. Man, it's especially the first story just really gets my skin crawling. It's so freaky. And because we're going to be on the Jericho cruising through the Bermuda Triangle in October, I thought this would be a great story to share. By the way, there are still some cabins available. If people are interested, just go to darknessevents.com or go to Darkness Radio and click on the events tab, darknessradio.com. Click on the events tab and you can still get some really great deals on the cabins for the Jericho cruise. Tim and I will be the only paranormal contingent aboard the ship. And Tenney was telling me last year about part of the story and then just gave me the follow up now. And I wanted to talk with you about that, John, and then tell you about a few things that we've had happen. And you know, how much credit do we take for these kind of weird anomalous moments as opposed to coincidence and just really good timing? But talk to us about the experiments that you did. And was this with the Newkirks? Is that right?
It was the Newkirks were part of it. Yeah. And Grant Wilson, too, from Ghost Hunters. So, you know, I've always been very interested in intention and the part that the human mind plays on our perception of what seems to be this shared reality that we have. And So when it comes to whether it's seances or even just investigating and people, you see people doing EVP sessions, like there seems to be larger unseen forces at play. And now, of course, you know, we're always looking for patterns and this stuff, but it's really interesting to me, even with skeptics. Just before I get into our experiment, I was sitting at a bar, my hometown bar, and this gentleman next to me found out what I did because the bartender told him, because they know me. And he said to me, "Do you really believe in like magic and the occult?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" And he said, "Do you really think that you can, you know, set up a circle and make things happen inside of it and call up demons? And do you believe in that type of stuff?" And I said, "Well, I don't really believe in it, but I have a lot of ideas about it." And I looked at him and I said, "You don't look like you believe in it." He said, "No, it's all hokum. None of that works." And then I watched him continue to cheer for what was at the time a Red Wings hockey game that he was watching. And I looked at him, I said, "Have you ever grown your beard out for the Red Wings so that they would win?" And he looked at me and laughed and he goes, "Yeah." And he didn't put it together in his head what I had just asked him, which was, "Are you performing a magic ritual?" He believes, you know, growing his beard out somehow affects the game, that he has some kind of influence. And when you go to a sports game, you see very large intention experiments.
That has got to be the dumbest thing I've ever heard, John, when obviously it's that you don't change your underwear during the season. Growing your beard out. Ridiculous.
But here you see these very large, almost seem to be magical experiments. You have people on a piece of, you know, quote unquote hollowed ground, right? It's a football game and there's lines and numbers all over it. And there's an elder who's commanding them and telling them what they have to do to get to a desired effect and result. And it's surrounded by people who cheer and sing in unison, certain chants and certain songs. And those people in the crowd feel, I mean, when a team wins, the crowd says, "We won," as if they were an enormous part of it, because their cheering and their songs and their belief in their team has affected change on the field. And so just in that aspect, like, it's much more, intention experiments are much wider accepted throughout the world. If people would look at them in what they actually are when they're cheering for a team, they are doing an intention experiment. And so when I had this opportunity through Amy Bruni's company, Strange Escapes, there was a big ghost cruise that left out of Boston. We did a night in Salem, and then we got on a boat and we sailed from Boston to Bermuda. And there was going to be this day when we were passing through the tip of the Bermuda Triangle. So knowing when we would be there and what time we would be going through the triangle, I talked to some of my friends who are occultists in Detroit, and I said, "Listen, I want to do an experiment on the ship, and I want you in Detroit to try and help us. So at this time, I want you to try and do a ritual, and then we'll do a ritual on the ship as well, and we'll try and make something happen on the ship." And at the time, I kind of jokingly said, like, "We'll try and draw up an ancient elder Cthulhu beast from the bottom of the Bermuda Triangle." That was kind of the hyperbolic nature of the experiment that I wanted to do. And so it neared midnight when we were on the ship and we had entered the Bermuda Triangle. And I told everybody that was with our group, you know, "You can come, you don't have to, but we're going to go out on the deck of the ship and we're going to try to do an intention experiment." And so about 70 of us walked out onto the deck and I had everybody hold their hands over the water, and it was midnight, so it was very dark. And I just want everybody to think about things that float, things that go up. And I just want you to chant up, whether it's out loud or in your mind, but look down at the water and think about things coming up and coming out of the water. And everybody, of course, giggles and laughs, and this is a very fun, kind of cool thing to do. And they've never done it before, so interest is high. But still, people are nervous because it's a strange thing to do. And plus, there are people walking past us on the ship who are just regular cruise goers, so you have to not be distracted by them. So maybe 7 to 8 minutes into this intention experiment, all these people chanting up, whether, like I said, in their mind or out loud, on the horizon, you could, you know, even though it was dark, you could still see where the water met the sky. And where we were looking, all of a sudden, a very dark fog starts to roll in. and it was coming directly at the ship, and it almost looked like a giant wave of water coming toward us, like one of those rogue waves that you hear about, taller than the ship. And I kept imploring people, like, don't pay attention to it. Just keep thinking up. Just make this happen. Bring this to us. And it got closer and closer. And at that point, it had gotten so massive, and the sky and the water had blended into pitch blackness, that people stopped the experiment. Just instinctively, everybody took their hands out from the water and kind of giggled and laughed and, oh my gosh, that's weird, and look what we're doing, and it's happening. And as soon as everyone got nervous and started laughing at it, that fog immediately disappeared, and it went right back to regular night, and you could see where the water met the sky, and everybody giggled and said, oh, that was weird, very strange, cool, I don't know if we did that or what just happened. And everybody tried to write it off as just a normal occurrence of this black fog rolling towards the ship.
Yeah, because that's just a normal occurrence. But it's funny how we try to write ourselves and dismiss it so that it's not nearly as terrifying as it really looked at the moment, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so I said, well, that was good. It was cool. Maybe we did that. Maybe we didn't. But it was, thank you all for, you know, doing this experiment. You know, because I had told them that there were occultists in Detroit helping us, too. And so everybody was excited that they had been part of something that might have been strange. So what's interesting about that is, so the next morning I wake up, there's this giant sound on the cruise ship that I've never heard before. And I wake up and it sounds, when you first get on a cruise ship, you go through this, all these processes of what happens if the ship starts to sink. There's sounds and bells and sirens. And so I heard this sound. I thought, uh-oh, something's happening that I don't know what's going on. So I got dressed and I ran out of my cabin, and they were blowing. It was a foghorn that they were blowing on the ship. So at some point during the night, a fog had enveloped the ship, to the point where they locked all of the outer doors of the ship. They weren't allowing people to go out on the decks because you couldn't even see the railing of the ship. And so we were enveloped in this super thick fog. And I started talking to one of the crew members, and we had built a rapport over a couple of days. And I said, so what's going on here? And he said, oh, you know, last night the navigational computers of the ship kind of got wonky, and we're about 60 miles off course. So we have to blow the foghorns until we get back on course. And he goes, it's really strange, you know, nothing like this has ever happened. And so that also became very interesting to me, that here you have these cruise ships, which are basically run on, you know, navigational controls. Like, they very rarely get lost and pushed off course. These are cruises that make the same trip back and forth all the time, all year long. And yet the night we did this giant intention experiment, somehow or another, the computers went wonky and the ship got lost in a fog bank, which happened for the rest of the day. The rest of the day we were covered in fog like that. So I like to think that maybe we did that as well.
See, now that, Tim, does that not just give you chills?
Yeah, it does.
I'm totally, and I'll tell you what, we're making this part live during our presentation here aboard the ship. And I want to know right now, how many people hearing this want to do this intention today, this evening on the ship? Who's in? Yeah, I didn't think so. It was worth a try. Let's examine the part two of this story, though. I want to talk about kind of some of the flashback of intention experiments and maybe when things don't always go the way we hope they're going to go. All right. We're back here on Beyond the Darkness. Our guest is John Tenney. We're talking about intention experiments. You told that very first one. Now, I asked you about that at the Michigan Paracon, and you said that you guys have went into another experiment. So walk me through the genesis of this one and what ended up happening.
So with the experience of the first one, I was excited. I got asked to do another cruise. And so I talked to Greg and Dana Newkirk, who run the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and the Occult, if they would help me do a kind of larger one on this next cruise, which was just going through the Gulf of Mexico. We were leaving from New Orleans and going to Jamaica. And I wanted to do something, since the last one I kind of promoted it hyperbolically as being this, let's summon up an elder demon from the bottom of the ocean. I wanted to do something that was much different and much more light and kind of happy for everyone. So, I mean, of course, you're going to Jamaica. Try and let's be happy about it, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So we were going through, and there was the first night of a full moon, and I figured that would be the night we should do it. So, again, I told everybody we're going to try an intention experiment. We're all going on the deck of the ship, and I don't know what's going to happen, but let's try and do something that's very happy and positive. So this time, the first time it had been probably about 40 to 70 people had showed up for the first intention experiment the year earlier. This time there were about 120, 130 people showed up. So a much larger group. And I had everyone hold their hands over the water. And unfortunately, we couldn't see the moon. It was very overcast, clouds covering the entire sky. And I said, don't worry, the moon is there. Just hold our hands over the deck of the water. And I said, and I want you to take something that you're not happy with, something that might be going on in your life or something that's troubling you. And I want you to think about it turning into a stone. And then I want you to make that stone start to shine brightly. And I want you to give that to the ocean. And I said, and while you're giving this little bright stone to the water and giving away your care and concern, I want you to think about the moon, and I want you to think about how we can light up our own lives and the lives of others around us. So everyone was thinking light, and I had everyone trying in that mindset of, even if it wasn't a bright object, something that was light like a feather or a balloon. And as we were doing that, the clouds in the most bizarre fashion parted only around the moon in almost a perfect circle, so that the moon started shining and you could just hear these kind of gasps. It was like we had blown the clouds apart, and all of a sudden the moon was shining directly on us. There was only one spot of sky where there wasn't any clouds, and it was right over us. And everybody got kind of excited, thinking that maybe this is something that we've done. And I started talking about feel light, feel like you can, you know, just move freely. And everybody was excited about the moon. And then the entire ship, this is again around 12 o'clock at night, the entire ship was immersed in a swarm of these giant dragonflies. They just appeared and covered the deck and were flying around everyone. And for some reason, everyone associated this with what we were doing. And within 10 minutes or 15 minutes of me ending the experiment, the clouds covered the moon back up, and the dragonflies that had shown up just vanished from everywhere that we were on the ship. And I couldn't help but feel that we had somehow manifested those dragonflies and kind of blew those clouds away from the moon.
Now, I know that sounds insane to many of you as listeners. I saw something, in a sense, very similar when I visited James Gilliland at the Assetti Ranch. And for those of you that are not familiar, ECETI.org. That's ECETI.org. The Assetti Ranch out in Trout Lake, Washington, it's a well-known hot spot for UFO activity. There was this huge 4th of July hippie party celebration, UFO calling down session that was going to take place. So I went along with my friends Kimberly and Susan, and we went to go witness this. I talked about it so much from the experiences I'd had there. They wanted to see this for themselves. And we saw a bunch of weird things throughout the day setting up. I mean, weird stuff. But that's not the point I want to get to. As evening started to set, and everybody's all excited, and you've got a couple hundred hippies out there waiting to commune with the alien life. honestly, they were hippies. I don't know. Everybody's in sandals and long hair and a hippie fest to me, but it was great. The clouds start filling the sky. And I went up to James. I said, man, you're going to have a whole field full of angry hippies if we get the cloud coverage tonight. And he looked at me very nonchalantly and he said, no, they've already told me they'll keep it clear. And I said, who's they, James? And he said, the aliens, our friends. I said, oh, really? And he makes this big announcement to everyone. And he goes, as long as we are here tonight watching the skies, our friends have said that they will keep the sky clear. Now, I can't begin to state John, how when you're in James Gilliland's presence, you just have this kind of calm sense of belief, but you're also knitted brow going, how, what is he? This sounds so insane.
Yeah.
And I watched something I've never seen before. The sky was filled with clouds. Like you could not see the sky except around his property. Above his property was this huge, perfect circle in the sky where it was just like God had cookie cuttered that chunk of sky of clouds out and pulled it out. And we could see, and we saw weird stuff all night long zipping through the skies through this weird cloud portal. And everybody's out there witnessing it. And I started to notice that as more and more hippies were turning in for the night, more and more observers were going to bed and settling into their tents for the evening, the circle was getting smaller. And at one point when we looked up, it was still open. The sky was still open, but it was very small, the window to see the clear sky. And we all looked down. We're talking, we're like, this was pretty remarkable. Aren't you glad you came? And, you know, we're talking to the five or six of us that stayed up that late. And I'm like, yeah, this is remarkable. And that the clouds stayed open for us this long. But you know what? I'm tired. It's getting cold. Maybe we should go back. And they're all like, yeah, let's call it a night. We all look up, complete 100% cloud coverage. There was no wind. So, you know, and I understand up in the stratosphere and up in the higher levels, there's constant movement. But for the entire night, it wasn't like clouds were moving around. There was just this portal cut in the sky. And the more people that went away, the smaller this got. So I realized that, was it the intention that we were told that as long as we watch the sky, we will get to see the sky? To me, that was...
Yeah.
That was pretty remarkable, John. And I, you know, and then literally that the five, six of us left over, the minute we change our attention from the sky to each other and then look back up and decide we're all going to bed, it's gone. The sky is gone and it's nothing but a wall of clouds.
Yeah. I mean, for both of the experiments we did on the cruise ships, I mean, it was one of, like you were saying, like as soon as our thoughts became individual again, and as soon as we weren't focused on a single thought as a group, you know, that black cloud the first time in Bermuda, just went away. And as soon as these dragonflies and the moon was so bright, as soon as everyone kind of got distracted by what was happening, you know, interacting with just thousands of dragonflies, the clouds came back. And then as soon as people realized, oh, where did the moon go? Like the moon went away. And then the dragonflies went away. And it really did seem to be correlated with the amount of concentration or the intention that we had while the event was happening.
Now I want to take a look more at the dark side of intention experiments. And I want to discuss, you know, the idea, right? You guys were focused in your first intention experiment of bringing something up from the depths. Just imagine whatever it was, just bringing something up. And as you're doing this huge fog bank, this wave of whatever darkness was coming up out of the ocean and heading towards you. And I know I'm going to get listeners that are going to ask me after the fact, did anybody capture this on video or on cell phone? Do we know of any existing footage of any of this?
There's footage of someone had their phone running that wasn't doing the experiment with our group. And you can see our group because they're using a phone and they're shooting at night. It's just black. I mean, I was kind of excited that maybe someone got it. But there are tons of photos from that, from the last experiment, because the moon was so bright and people were so shocked by it. There are photos I can post on my Twitter and on my Facebook and send them to you. And you can post them around showing the dragonflies and this opening of clouds around the moon for sure.
And it's important to note, again, this swarm of dragonflies happened in the middle of the ocean.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And one of the first things I did was, you know, you don't really have great Wi-Fi on a cruise. So as soon as I got home and I had good access to Wi-Fi, I started researching migratory paths of dragonflies and when do they move and do they fly through that area? And as far as I could find in my 2 to 3 days of trying to track down migratory patterns of dragonflies, it wouldn't have made any sense for them to be there. It wasn't their season for mating. When they do mate, they tend not to fly directly over open water because a lot of dragonflies need to land. They have been known to land on the flotsam, but usually they try and stick close to land because they can't exist just floating on salt water. You know, if they get tired, they don't just land. So it was a very odd event. And it does, it seems from my research, if someone knows better about dragonflies, that they shouldn't have been there at that time.
Yeah, that is very strange. Let's do this. Normally on Sunday's show, even on the Monday presentation of Sunday's show, we do a theater of the mind. Because of everything that went on with us being at the Michigan Paracon this week, and we're getting some fascinating stories from Mr. Tenney himself, we're going to skip on theater of the mind. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the dark side, the monkey paw effect of intention experiments. Do you need to be careful, and how explicit should you be in setting your intention so that there is not a negative response or something coming that you didn't see? You know, with the monkey paw idea is that you make a wish and you may get that wish, but at what cost? We'll discuss that and more when we return to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
All right, we're back. This is Beyond the Darkness, Monday edition of Sunday's show. Hope you guys are enjoying it as much as we are. And we'll be back on task next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, with brand new episodes. And again, please forgive our one day lag on this. But I think you're getting a fantastic show. Great guest today, John Tenney, our guest. John, we're talking about intention experiments. And we talked about two that you had done and some things that I've seen. We've often wondered, and I know Art Bell from Coast to Coast AM stopped doing intention experiments because of flashback, because of that repercussion of what you wish for sometimes has an adverse side effect. And Tim and I thought, oh, that's silly. And if you're doing something good, only good can come from it. And again, now this could just be timing, right? And again, how often do you look out at the sea from the back of the ship? And, you know, maybe that happens often. You'll see clouds roll by or as a storm passes out there and it just is a quick storm that blows out. And that's what, you know, that's what happens. So maybe you guys just happen to time it right and you were there. Well, there have been all these wildfires for the last decade, it seems like, that are constantly breaking out in Oregon, Washington, California, places like that. And we had listeners begging us for intention experiments. Please help us pray for rain, send positive energy. So we, especially with the Colorado storm that hit, or Colorado fires that hit a few years back, we decided to ask for intention. We had everybody on the show. We listened. I kind of walked them through it for just a few minutes. Okay, right now, whether you're listening live or you're listening, you know, to the podcast version of the show, I want you to just focus on the state of Colorado and just imagine the fires. And I want you to start to see the clouds filling up with or the skies filling up with rain clouds and just a deluge of rain that comes down and snuffs these fires. And it was, Tim, how quickly was the response on that? Do you remember?
I'm trying to remember. It was pretty quick.
Within a week or something. Yeah. They had no rain.
Yeah,
in their forecast.
It was within a week.
People are listening to the show over and over through, you know, replays and through the podcast. When all of a sudden we start getting messages and they're like, wow, guys, I think it's working. There was no rain expected. And all of a sudden there's this rain cloud coming in and we're going to get some storms. And John, it rained so hard it was washing out roads. As a matter of fact, the road to the Stanley Hotel was completely wiped off the side of the mountain, from my understanding. And and then we sat there and we thought, good, did we go too far with this? Was this asking too much? How do you start to build the intention so that it's a more controlled aspect? So, I mean, going forward, we started doing things like asking for the rain. I said, imagine not just the fire and the rain coming down. Imagine the grass regrowing now and things rebirthing because, you know, the fires are out. Everything is safe and there's enough moisture to go around. And we started trying to do that. And we seemed to get some pretty interesting aspects. And then a few years ago, when the drought was taking place in California, which seems to be ongoing, we had people begging for rain for the drought. So we put out a call and there was no forecast. People were telling me from California, boy, if you guys can make something happen, there's no rain in our forecast for like the next month. And we started pouring out the thoughts and prayers and intention. And suddenly, within 2 or 3 days, we're getting reports, Dave, there's rain clouds building up. And we're laughing about, sure, there is. And then they got like torrential rain that they've never had at that time of year before. And in record amounts of water came down. and they got these responses. But then again, they started having mudslides and other damage. So, you know, part of it is we're sitting there questioning, well, is it a bad idea to continue these experiments? And do you do this? But then we've done prayer and healing requests for others that seem to have had really amazing response. You know, how what's your thoughts on the whole idea of intentions, and what should we be doing? And should there be a protocol in place for protection so that you don't overdo something like this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, because, you know, if it is doing something, you know, there might be a multitude of ways that it's working. Like, we might just be manifesting rain wherever there needs to be rain. Like, and it's just coming out of nowhere and it's raining and then it's gone. But in some instances, it seems a lot of the times that, like, you're pulling energy from somewhere to go somewhere else. And if you're doing that, you're leaving a void of goodness or positivity somewhere. And so it seems like, you know, if there is that idea that nothing can be, you know, destroyed and or created, it just transforms in shape and form. Like, it would almost seem like if you can have a huge wave of goodness, you're leaving this kind of pit behind it where that goodness was at. And will that follow your positive experiments? So even when we did the second experiment on the cruise ship, you know, my original idea was, you know, I'm going to have people think of something bad or something problematic in their life, and they'll turn it into a stone and throw it into the water. But then I started thinking to myself, too, oh, well, I'm just having people fill up the ocean with negativity in that way. So I was like, okay, once you turn it into the stone, I want you to turn it into something bright and glowing and a star and something beautiful, and take that and then give that to the ocean, give the ocean something beautiful, because I didn't want to pollute the ocean with these negative thoughts, right?
Suddenly you release the megalodon from the bottom of the ocean, right? The Kraken has been summoned.
And plus, you know, you have some people who believe that, you know, the Gulf of Mexico is where, you know, a giant meteor hit and destroyed all of the dinosaurs. I'm like, let's not redo that, right? Let's not fill it up with more stuff that kills everything on the planet. But I think it's hard for us to know, right? Like, discussed throughout the Michigan Paracon that we were all at, and one of the discussions that everybody has is, you know, what is going on, and we really don't know. So I do think it's best to go into it with your best intention and not wanting it so that you're right, right? I mean, you know this, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners know this, but a lot of people, when they go forward with good intentions, whether it's to help someone or not, you have to get rid of that fear that you're going to get something from it, that it's going to look good on you, that we did it, because that's egotism, and that's not such a great thing sometimes. And so that's even a somewhat negative energy to put into your good intention. You know, we're going to solve this problem, puts it on you and not on the overall kind of universal thing that we all exist to. It is super difficult. And you see a lot of times people who are very love and light, and they spend their whole time being very positive and trying to be positive, and yet when they're not posting memes about positivity and bringing love and light to people's lives on their Facebook posts, the ones when they talk about their normal lives are how their car broke down and their muffler blew up and they just broke their leg and they just fell down and bumped their head. And everything that's not love and light is how their life is going wrong. I always found that really interesting.
Now, the other aspect is, all right, if we're standing at the back of this cruise ship on the Jericho cruise, and we get a couple hundred people to go out and do this experiment, and we're imagining something rising from the depths, you know, is it that moment of in Ghostbusters, whatever you think of next will become your destroyer? Right. So if they're like, you know, they're just imagining something coming up, but they all start imagining just something horrific. Do we then call into creation something negative or a rogue wave? People are hearing that what might be toppling over these ships and knocking them down in the Bermuda Triangle are these rogue waves that are sometimes reaching several hundred feet in size. And, you know, they've often wondered if it was some kind of, you know, geological or gases released from the bottom of the ocean. And now they're tending to believe that it might be these giant rogue waves. If we're all focusing on bringing something up, is there that aspect that what we may be rising from that could be a natural occurrence, but giving power to a rogue wave that could take us down? you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's why when we did the first time in the Bermuda Triangle, and it was just this hyperbolic, I had set into everybody's mind this, that, like I said earlier, that funny kind of Lovecraftian elder god, dark world, bring up something big from the bottom of the ocean, just bring it up no matter what it is. And then you get this amorphous giant black cloud that's moving toward the ship, and everybody, like I said, got very concerned and nervous, and there was nervous chatter and laughter, and everyone stopped immediately because there was no focused thought. And so I think that's what was really interesting when we did the second one, was I very specifically concentrated everybody into kind of a single ball of light. And it, you know, we didn't make the moon, but we did make it appear through those clouds. And so I thought that was very important, that I get people to focus more on one thought, where the first time I was doing it, I was just telling people, I don't care what it is, let's just try and bring something up. And you get this giant black wave. Then the next day, our cruise ship got lost in the fog bank. And actually, 2 weeks after we got home, a sailboat that had disappeared in the 1950s in the Bermuda Triangle, they found floating in the Bermuda Triangle. And I thought, oh, maybe we brought that up too. Maybe it just took a couple weeks for it to come up.
Isn't that weird? And I love, you know, I love the offbeat horror movies. And just flashing back on that, the idea of the Friday the 13th series, The New Blood was the name of the episode. And I love that they finally pit the you know, immovable force that is Jason Voorhees against somebody with telekinetic powers, right?
Right.
And that girl is focused, and she's having a bad time, and she's focused on her father that drowned, and she starts concentrating on the water, and by accidentally, you know, her focus unleashes Jason back onto the world, right? And right. I just thought that was really kind of an interesting aspect of it. And here you're talking about, you know, be careful what you focus on. So now there is news from the Bermuda Triangle area that Daryl Miklosh, who does the TV show Cooper's Treasure, mm-hmm. has found what he believes to be something very unique and anomalous under the water. Something that he thinks may, if there are UFOs down there, he thinks this may be one. And it's larger, and it seems an actual structure, but should be dating back to around 14,000 years ago, which makes no sense for what it is that they're finding down there. So do you think by having a focused intention on bringing something like that up from the ocean, or even focused on USOs, if we call out, will they come? I've seen that experiment done in a sense with people like the Prophet Yahweh, who is based out of Las Vegas, and he would call down through prayer UFOs, and they did an actual, and you could find this on YouTube, folks. This isn't just some goofy story, but an actual deal that they've got on film. It was for local Las Vegas news. They took Yahweh out to an undisclosed location, undisclosed to him. They didn't tell him where they were going to take him, so there could be no pre-setup. They put him out. He started doing his little prayer, and a silver ball started to drop from the sky, and they were capturing it on film. He believed that he could pray down these alien craft, and they caught it on flipping TV.
Yeah, I want you guys so badly to be able to bring up a UFO from the Bermuda Triangle. I mean, aside from your listeners, let me know what night you're doing it. I'll get all the occultists that I know in Detroit to try and help you. Let's bring a UFO up out of the Bermuda Triangle.
I'm all for it. And you know what? You know who will love this is Chris Jericho. So yeah. I will get him involved. We'll see if we can't get, although, you know, here's the problem, Tim. I can just imagine, especially with Jericho's backing on this, suddenly every member of this cruise is standing on the back of the ship, and we flip the damn thing over because the proportionate weight is now standing on the rear of the ship. So maybe we just disperse around the outer ring. We'll do like a Hands Across America where everybody's around the entire perimeter of the ship calling forth the UFOs from under the water.
But how great is it that everyone on the cruise ship is at the back of the ship, and as the ship starts to sink, much like the very end of the movie The Abyss, a city-sized UFO rises up and keeps the ship from sinking.
Well, that's what the second part of the intention will become, I'm pretty damn sure. Let's do that. You know what? I'm going to talk to Jericho when we get done talking today. I'm going to talk to Jericho about this, and we will find a day and a time. I'll see what our schedule looks like, and we'll find a time to do this and give you advanced information. But yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe we focus on a UFO coming up, something, an underground or underwater submersible object. that's down there to see if we can call upon them. And that's been seen in the waters out that way. They've seen these anomalous light force that has moved underneath ships and has not pinged radar or sonar, but have moved through the waters underneath a lot of these cruise ships. A lot of the military ships have had these experiences as well. I've talked to a few naval personnel that have seen things out in the ocean that they, you know, again, they tell me behind the scenes, but that they've seen this actual thing happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if you can't get the UFO to rise up, if you can get, you know, USO lights, if you can get lights to swarm underneath the boat, I mean, how fantastic and amazing would that be?
Well, we will we'll definitely work on this and get back to you with a date and time. And for all of you listening on Beyond the Darkness, we will keep you apprised of this as we move it through. But yeah, if you've got people there, and I'm sure, you know what, why don't we do this? As we get closer to it, we will announce it to our entire audience here and on Midnight in the Desert. And let's see if we can get people all doing it at the same time from around the world, focusing their intention on that cruise ship and having the USOs come up. Although we have a lot of people that we piss off, Tim. I'm afraid that rogue wave is coming our way from the intention of others.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We should be careful with this deal. So while you're intending for these USO lights, just intend a giant bubble of inflatable air around both Tim and I for the entire cruise. That's right. All I'm asking.
Right.
That is it. Now, that kind of falls right then. We start looking into the vein of things like curses and voodoo and witchcraft. Can it work if we don't know that it's being done against us? The intention of sending forth negative energy. But yet it seems in some cases curses can take place without the cursed even knowing that they've had that focused, idea sent at them. Where do you stand on the idea of curses and voodoo and that type of dark magic?
I do think, at least in my life and the way that I live my life, it does seem sometimes that people can put the evil eye on you or the curse on you. But, I mean, those curses and those hexes, those really take hold, it seems, the moment after someone acknowledges that that's what might be happening to you. So the idea that you don't know about the curse, I think, is a misnomer, right? So, like, your life is going fine, or maybe just an everyday happenstance, something you knock glass over, your car breaks down or something like that. But it's that moment when a friend or someone on Facebook or Twitter or someone you know says, you know, did you ever do anything wrong to anyone? Did you ever do anything bad to anyone? Could someone have done that to you, put a curse on you? And that's when the curse or the hex really takes hold of a person, is when they start, in their mind, they start thinking about it. And now that they're thinking about it, they're bringing it to the forefront, and they've become a part of that manifestation process. You know, with intention experiments being either, you know, whether they're curses or magic spells or these giant things on cruise ships, even when we're doing ghost investigations and you're doing EVP sessions, right? You have everybody go into a room and everybody in there wants to hear a voice recorded on the tape. And so you put, you know, a digital recorder down and you press record and start asking questions. And everybody is focused on this object in the middle of the table and making a voice and being able to hear a voice. So, you know, are you hearing the voice of a ghost, or is it the collective mind of the group somehow imprinting on the recorder? You know, how much of all of supernatural and paranormal phenomena are we dealing with that is potentially us and our kind of hive mind manifesting all of it?
The idea, too, that we're focused and something could happen. And I know there was, I think you were the one that first introduced me to the story, and maybe I'm incorrect, but during World War II, wasn't there a call on witches in England to help deflect an oncoming?
Yeah, absolutely.
Attack? Yeah. What was that? It was like the cone of power or something, I think they called it at that time.
Yeah, there was a cone of power. And one of the things that's so interesting about that, again, was you hire all of these occultists and witches to kind of thwart the enemy, but you increase their power by, you know, we talk now about secrets, but the part of that experiment of getting those witches was allowing them to ask other witches, which means that it's going to spread throughout the country, which means other people are going to be thinking about it. Now you have a much larger group and a much larger basis for this kind of group mind, this group intention, this hive mind working together to make manifest something. And then I'm sure word sneaks through couriers into other countries, and then it affects how they're thinking about it and maybe makes them worried, which gives more power to the kind of destroy them in Britain. And so you have people in Germany worrying that witches are going to do something to them. So again, you have multiple layers of how people are thinking about it and how they're going to make manifest their desired result.
I want to, we're going to definitely do this off air. We'll talk and get everything coordinated on this and see what we can do and report on that. I do have a few other questions for you as we kind of continue our discussion about the strange and anomalous and some of the other things you've seen and witnessed that you think may have more of a power from the people that are wanting the experience as opposed to an actual experience happening. Are we projecting? Are we creating and manifesting a visual anomaly that isn't really there, but it is through our own unique shared perceptions that this seems to take place? We're here with John Tenney. We're talking about intentions and mind thoughts and ideas. We've talked about tulpas and creations and creatures and things that kind of might come together because of our own perceptions or want and desire for these things to occur, John. And I wonder if we might be somehow telepathically projecting to one another what's going on. That may be part of what we experience, which is no less paranormal and unusual. But when people are having a joint shared experience, could it be more that we're all tied into each other, our excitement, our energy level? And I've noticed at some of these larger events, when you've got a group of diehards that are really excited, they seem to notice. Yet the people on the peripheral that are there, and maybe they're there for their spouse or loved one, and they just are there to support them but don't have an interest, they don't see anything. But a group of five or six of them can be in a row next to them, and they're watching a shadow person walk toward them, or they see something mist-like and anomalous float past them when everybody else is missing it. What are your thoughts on the idea that we may be connected in a way that we can influence the perceptions of others?
I absolutely think that we're connected and that we do influence the kind of what seems to be shared reality that we have with others, and that you can partake in it or you can kind of sit it out. I think at a certain point over the past, I don't even know how many years, when I talk to my friends, and I've started to speak more openly about this, but I really do feel as I get older and I look at the universe itself and the wider version of reality and how we interact with it and how we interact with each other, there seems to be the one thing that I've always recognized is that the cosmos loves to make things. It loves to do things, whether that is destroy things or create things. It just loves to make stars and people and animals and space and suns and moons, and it makes things. That's something we know that the universe and the cosmos does. And in many instances, to supernatural, paranormal, even sometimes mundane phenomena, it seems like it's a game. And that the universe is asking you throughout your life to play, to do something strange. And when you do something strange, when you try to create, when you make the decision that I'm going to try and actually talk to a ghost, and it's not hindered by doubt, when you really go into it and you start believing in the moment of weirdness, the universe makes the next move. So people who choose not to kind of play the game don't get that much. They'll get a tap from the universe, and they'll get a coincidence or a synchronicity, something strange. And that's kind of like the universe tapping them on the shoulder saying, like, do you want to play? And you can choose to play or not play. And it'll wait a little while if you don't play, and it'll give you another tap. But when you have big events and you have all of these combined minds and all of these people, like you said, you'll have a lot of real true believers in a room, and the universe starts tapping everyone in the room saying, do you want to play? And people start to play back. That is where things become inherently bizarre and strange.
I'm really fascinated with the way that people think and have these shared experiences. And in some cases, with no preconceived notion of what they think they're going to see or experience, they're just there to have a paranormal experience that something weird happens that seems to shock all of them. To me, that lends itself to the fact that, you know, we're not giving a definitive answer to what we want, but something seems to happen outside of the concept of what we may have expected. You know, we may have expected at Mansfield Reformatory to see a prison guard or a prisoner, yet we see something totally weird and anomalous that takes place. It doesn't have a shape or form, but it's something, you know, different than the normal surroundings. And yeah, with that, is that superseding the idea of our, our putting out our intention for it, or because there's no defined focus and everybody just wants to see something, is that why it has a hard time grabbing a form?
I mean, I don't even know if it's that, if it can be defined like that. I think sometimes if you are kind of doing something that's super weird and the cosmos says, oh, that's weird, I like what they're doing, I'll give them that weird thing. And so you get this confirmation of what you wanted, of the weird thing. You get the confirmation of the intention experiment or the group of people who wanted to have a ghostly, quote unquote, ghostly experience. But sometimes it's almost as if everybody wants a ghostly experience and the cosmos is tired of the ghostly experience. And so it gives you, it gives everybody in the room something that they're not expecting. It's very much like playing chess. You know, you can make traditional moves in a way to win the game in a traditional way, or you can make a completely strange move to push the game into a different direction. And so people who, I'm going to go out, I'm going to see a UFO, we're all going to go out, we're all going to see UFOs, and then they'll go out and no one sees UFOs. But something bizarrely strange will happen. I did an event at a place called Ashmore Estates, and we were all sitting around doing a kind of traditional EVP session in this old cafeteria, and we were trying to get, you know, someone to manifest a voice on one of the recorders, and everybody was being very quiet, and as they should be, and we were doing this EVP session as they are always done. And there were maybe, I think, 16 of us in the room sitting quietly at this old cafeteria table, and nothing was happening. There were no taps, there were no bumps, no EVPs were showing up, but we were still all silently trying to make things happen and waiting for this ghostly experience. And one of the people at the table mentioned, for some reason, just out of nowhere, they mentioned the peanut butter sandwiches. And the person across from them argued that they hated peanut butter sandwiches. And they've literally within 30 seconds, everybody at the table was arguing over food, that they didn't get enough food, that the food they were getting they didn't like. And then as quickly as that argument started between all the people sitting at the table, it stopped. And then we went right back to the EVP session. And I sat back in my chair and I looked at everyone and I said, you know, we're in a cafeteria, right? We're sitting at a cafeteria table in a place where people were forced to eat food that they hated to eat. And we all burst into this horrible argument over the food that we're eating for no reason whatsoever. Like, it just spontaneously combusted around us. And when everybody started to think about it, I mean, it was just this thing that took place for maybe 60 seconds or 65 seconds. And then we shrugged it off as if it was nothing. And I was like, maybe that was the experience. Maybe it wasn't a ghost tap or a voice on the recorder. Maybe somehow we were all directly influenced by the energies that have been stored in this room. I mean, I don't know, but it just seemed so odd and it seemed so unexpected that I had to laugh that the universe or the cosmos or the spirits or our interactions with each other had given us something that none of us had expected.
And that is interesting, right? Because then do you become, did that crowd, because of the intent of wanting to make connection, become a radio, right? And the frequency, which I know is often overused in our field, but the frequency of the times played through them. And that was what they were picking up.
Yeah.
You know, that's
so bizarre, Dave. I've never seen 16 or 17 adults so adamantly upset about the sandwiches that they weren't eating and that they didn't get, but what they were forced to eat in the past. Like, the conversation was hysterically strange, but nobody realized it was strange while it was happening. It was only the moment after it stopped when we all kind of returned back to this dark room, quiet EVP session, when I was like, oh, something just happened. But it wasn't an apparition. It wasn't a voice. It wasn't a tap. It wasn't, it was some kind of weird collective energy.
Okay, with that in mind, you've got that going. Now, we realize that that place is rich in some kind of energy. How and when do you think we're going to ever find technology that will be keen enough that we can tune into that and make a more substantial one-on-one conversation or one-on-one breakthrough? Do you think that's ever going to happen, or is that just, you know, they've been asking that same question since the, you know, beginning of time? Will it happen or won't it?
Over the years, over the past almost 30 years now, like I have hope that there will be some kind of breakthrough where we can have direct and immediate contact and interaction. But as I get older and I look at how bizarre this phenomenon seems to be or alleges to be, and how it manifests itself in my life and in the lives of the people around me, it very much seems to be that not knowing is a part of the human experience. It's the way that we process this information, the theories, the hypotheses, and the ideas that we have behind it. And not knowing seems to be a very driving, motivating force behind doing something which I think is very important as well, which is interacting with the people around us. The discussions and the philosophical debates and the intellectual arguments and discussions that we have is a very human thing to do. And all of this high, strange phenomena not being solved seems to be a very important point. So I don't think that we ever will.
And maybe that's okay, right? That's part of the experience of life, is continually questioning and putting forth those bits so that we can get some little flashes of insight that there's something there. But you know what? I wonder how people would feel collectively if proof of ghosts really existed. What would that mean to the world if we know that there is, without a doubt, another lifetime, or that we live past this human form? Would we see things, again, like the intention experiment? Once you make something happen, would there be a negative impact? Would that acceptance cause a bigger wave of suicides?
I've talked about that. I think you and I have actually talked about that. But yeah, I mean, with the assurance that there is something after this reality, that something after this lifetime, I feel like it would be tragic what would happen. People who would, quote unquote, kind of cash out immediately, because why am I going to deal with these bills and the stresses of this life if I know that there's something beyond this one? And so not knowing actually allows us time to process and grow and evolve and understand how to deal with complex situations and the wonder of not knowing. I mean, it becomes a very beautiful thing. Knowing becomes this very limiting force. And a book I wrote a few years ago, I won't be able to directly quote myself, but I'll paraphrase. You know, if there is a point in time when the stars have been counted and the weight of the universe is known, and the existence of all energies before and after life have been counted, documented, written down, and stored for all time, humanity and life will be a collective yawn. There will be nothing else to know. And that's very boring and seems very sad to me.
I agree. So there might be a need for that mystery to remain. And once we know too much or we get confirmation, you're right. I mean, what keeps us moving to check out the oceans, to check out space, is knowing that there's an ever expanding possibility of what could be out there, and pushing those boundaries. But right, if we start getting all the answers, you know, which if you even go back to the biblical reference, right, don't eat from the tree of knowledge, because once you do it, it kind of steals away from you the experience of life. Right. And instead of just learning and finding it, you learn too much too fast, and maybe we're not ready for that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it was even, you know, Stephen Hawking in one of his earlier papers used to speak about, and there may also be the fact that none of this can be known. And so the answer is to give us an answer that seems like we know. And once we seem like we know, we'll stop looking, and therefore we'll never find the answer.
All right, pass it over. It's my turn to take a hit. No, I love that. John, I know our time is up. I wanted to thank you. And we've got to get you on. I know you and I have talked about doing a true crime episode together with some weird and bizarre supernatural type crimes. And I know you're always finding new stories to share. So let's clear some time on our schedule in the next few weeks and get together for that if you're open to it.
Absolutely. Anytime you need.
It's fantastic chatting with you again, catching up. We've got a link to John's website so you can find more about him, his books, and the work that he does, where he's going to be next. And we will keep you all in the loop with our intention experiment. I want to make this happen. We're going to try to make alien contact, UFO contact, on that cruise. We will have some people that will be there strictly to film, and we will have people there to strictly be a part of the experiment. Although, I mean, before we say goodbye, I am curious. How do you think that may impact that type of experience? You know, I did an episode, John, of Ghost Adventures, where we went to the Stardust Ranch, which was known to have all types of activity, from cryptid to paranormal, ghosts, poltergeist, aliens, and over the mountaintop across from them, many experiences with what they believe to be mothership and craft. Sure. And when I went up there, I turned over my phone and walkie-talkie. And they're like, why? And I said, because if they know I can call for help any second, why would they come to me? Why would they make that known? Do you think that by employing a video or things like that, that it might actually interfere in the process, that it's more about being in the moment and the experience and not necessarily there to document? Or, you know, I don't know. What do you think that might have an impact on?
I do, right? Like, I do think that sometimes if everyone is focused on recording it and capturing it, your focus isn't on making it happen. So I do think that there is a certain aspect to that. But again, I, with our last intention experiment on the ship that we did, there was a moment where there were these, you know, there were moments where you thought, oh, this is when I'm supposed to take my camera out. Oh, this is when I'm supposed to film this. Oh, you know, that's how we got the pictures of the moon and all of the dragonflies and stuff like that. There were these moments when, okay, now is the time. And everybody kind of collectively felt that. And I thought it was because we were all at the same mental attitude. But I think going into it, knowing that, okay, we're going to capture it, we're going to get it on film, I think that part of the intention has to be pushed to the back and become the least important point.
Very cool. John Tenney, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, catching up with you again. Great seeing you at the Michigan Paracon. I hope our paths will cross more during this next year. But we'll talk to you again soon on True Crime Tuesday. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is the special Monday edition of Sunday's Beyond the Darkness.
Rewards programs are a lot like pop culture. They can be hard to keep up with. But with Venmo's new rewards program, Venmo Stash, rewards are so easy because the more you do, the more you get. And you choose the bundle of brands you get cash back at. It's giving fiscal queen. It's giving star. It's giving up to 5% cash back at your favorite brands. Just pick a bundle of your go-to spots to shop with your Venmo debit card and earn cash back at them. Do more, get more with Venmo Stash. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. Venmo Stash bundle terms and exclusions apply. Max $100 cash back per month. See terms at venmo.me/stash terms.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.